We're doing the laws of Shabbat, and we're in the middle of a discussion about moving Muktzah. So today, we're going to learn about what happens if you picked up Muktzah by mistake. So a person forgot he's not supposed to be handling Muktzah, and he picked up an item that was Muktzah. We'll begin with the general rule, and then we'll go into details. The general rule is, if it's the type of thing that one, if you put it down right away, so you'll get a monetary loss. There are different types of muktzah that are delicate. And if you just drop them or put them down at whatever location you're at, they'll get destroyed. There are certain things that get destroyed because if they get wet, they get destroyed. There are certain things that get destroyed because if you leave them there, someone will step on it, or it'll get thrown out, or it'll stay in the sun. So a person takes a muktzah item by mistake into his hands. He forgot. So if by putting it down right away, he's going to have a monetary loss, so there's room to be lenient and take it to a place where he could put it away. Notice the difference between this and when a person lifted a muktzah item because it was permissible. You remember the tzorch gufo and makomo, there are types of muktzah that we discussed that I'm allowed to pick them up and put them away. But here, we're talking about that he wasn't allowed to. It's not tzorech gufo o makomo. He suddenly realizes, oh no, I left this outside. He sees his wallet sitting outside on his porch. Oh no, I don't want all my neighbors. He sees he left his wallet on top of his car. Am I allowed to take it now? So he lifts the wallet to bring it home. And then his kid says, Abba, you're not allowed to take that. So in a minute, we're going to discuss the details. But there are many examples where a person lifts muktzah and suddenly says, wait, I wasn't allowed to do that. I'm not going to sit on top of the car now. There's no tzorech gufo, there's no tzorech mekomo. Aside from which that a wallet has its own issues. It's a basis de davar asur, and the money is muktzah mechamat gufo. So he really has no permissibility to move that item. So if by putting it down now he will incur monetary loss, so being that he lifted it by mistake, so then the halacha says, okay, take it to a place you could hide it so that you don't get harmed. But what happens if it's something which you won't lose anything by it? He's outside on his porch and he notices he left his hammer outside. He picks up the hammer to bring it home, and then he realizes, wait a second, I'm not allowed to do that. I don't need this hammer for anything. It's not tzorch gufo, it's not tzorch makomo. Nothing will happen if I put it back down here. Do we say once it's in your hand, you can go put it in its proper place? So the answer is no. He's not going to incur any loss. So we have two types of muktzah. When we know that there's a muktzah that you're not going to be allowed to move. For example, muktzeh mechamat chesron kis, something that's very expensive. You have a shechita knife. So you can't shecht on Shabbos. And a shechita knife costs, the cheapest one is 800 shekel. So it's a very expensive thing. You don't want it to get banged around. So that's muktzeh mechamat chesron kis. Right? That's a muktzeh that you're very careful about it because it's very delicate, it's very expensive. So there can be all kinds of refined instruments that we have that way. And it could be that our cell phone is a muktzeh mechamat chesron kis. Could be. Because your cell phone, you're not, you don't want to use it as many different things because you are concerned that it shouldn't get harmed. Could be. O mechamat gufo. So another type of muktzeh that you're not going to be allowed to move is a rock. Money. Muktzeh mechamat gufo. This item is muktzeh. It's intrinsically muktzeh. It's not even a vessel. Money? Ten agurot piece. Okay, so that's muktzeh mechamat gufo. So then you're not allowed to move it at all. And the second you remember that it's muktzeh, you're not supposed to handle it, you're supposed to put it down. But what if the muktzeh is a lighter muktzeh? The muktzeh is a klishim nachtoli sur. We'll go back to your hammer. A hammer is not expensive. So a hammer is not a klishim nachtoli sur. A hammer is simply I'm sorry, a hammer is not mukhtzeh mechamat gufo. A hammer is simply a kli shemachto liyisur. A hammer is a vessel which you use for prohibited things. If I needed the hammer to open up a coconut, I'd be allowed to take it on Shabbos. So then, if I lifted the hammer by mistake, I was walking home and I noticed the hammer placed on the porch. I said, that doesn't belong there. I lift the hammer to bring it inside. And then I remember, wait a second, it's Shabbos, I shouldn't be doing this. So then, being that I lifted it already, and being that it's a kli shem nachto liyisur, so once it's in my hand, I'm allowed to put it away. I'm allowed to take it and put it in its proper place. It would be more appropriate, though, to put it back. Put it the first place you can put it. Don't put it, if you have a place that you could put it that you're comfortable, don't go all the way to find the exact right place you want it. Put it on a high shelf. Put it somewhere you'd be comfortable with it. What happens if you use that hammer? So then you can go all the way back to put it back in its proper place, because you were allowed to handle the hammer. Meaning when I use the hammer to open a coconut, so then I'm allowed to even go and put it back. I don't have to put it in the first legitimate place to put it. Yes?
Isn't the hammer like the broken glass cup? I'm saying, isn't the kids that dangerous?
I don't think so, but I guess it could mean. That's your call. You'll see as a parent. You'll decide. If it's dangerous, then yeah, then you'll have to move it. By me, it depends what stage my kids are in. I'm saying, there's a stage where the hammer is dangerous because I'm scared one's going to use it on the other. I'm saying, so that's dangerous, yeah. You have to see what stage, you know, what stage the kids are in. That's, yes, okay. Now we're going to evolve into another topic within mukta, which is generally, we describe it as a more severe type of mukta, and that is called nolad. Remember, when we speak about mukta, what we're talking about is, did I have intention when Shabbat came in that this item would have any use by me over Shabbat? So that's our generic definition of mukta. An item, which I didn't think when Shabbat entered, I thought I have nothing to do with that item over Shabbat. I am not interested in handling money on Shabbat. I'm not allowed to make purchases. I'm not interested in handling my wallet, my laptop, my hammer. All these tools are muktzeh because as Shabbos enters, in my mind, I've separated from them. Now, if something is nolad, that means this item wasn't in the world before Shabbat came, so then, of course, I didn't have in mind I would use it on Shabbat. I couldn't, because it wasn't here. So that would include an egg that was laid on Shabbat. It's not here. It wasn't here. Now it's here. A person has ash. In ancient times, they used the ash. So if they burnt, if you had in your fireplace, you had wood burning. So aside from the wood burning, which is muktzah, when the wood finishes burning, you get up the next morning and you have a lot of ash in the fireplace, you're not allowed to move it because the ash is muktzah. And the prohibition here would be even the tzorch gufo makomo, meaning in ancient times, one of the ways they made the house pleasant was they would burn all kinds of wood and perfumes. They would burn things that would give a nice smell in the house. So if you wanted your house smelling nicely for Shabbat, you would set this up before Shabbat came in. This was called, in Tanaic terms, it was called mugmar. You'd end the meal, you'd put the mugmar, you'd put on the coals, you'd put this stuff that would burn and make a nice smell. So I imagine that as Shabbat came in, people would put that on the coals. You wanted your house smelling nicely for Shabbat. Okay, but now that it's ash, aside from the fire that was muktzah, now the ash is muktzah. So I wouldn't be allowed to move it, even the tzorech gufo and mekomo. Another area where this comes up often is with regards to milk that was milked on Shabbos. So when you milk, if milk is milked on Shabbos, that's also nolad. Okay, so where does this come up? Sometimes a woman's nursing, and she has an infection. So when a woman has an infection, so then it can be very painful for her to nurse the baby directly. So she'll want to extract the milk. But then we have a problem. There's no problem with the baby nursing the milk. But what happens if she's going to extract the milk? Is that milk muktzah once she extracts it? Is it a product of a task that's prohibited, squeezing out the milk from herself? So those are two issues that come up with regards to mother's milk. Before, I don't want to go into the halachot, because where this often comes up is with regards to a newborn, with regards to a preemie, with regards to children that really need their mother's milk. And that's why halachically, we very often say that everything's permissible, because we view mother's milk as something that's very necessary to a baby in the baby's early stages of life, or when the baby's struggling for life. And that's why, even though the question exists, and there will be times that we have to take it into account, but I'm not going into it, because I'd like that people would ask the question if it comes up, because sometimes it can be very dangerous to be stringent here, or to assume that, this is mukta, or I'm not allowed to do this, I have to do this with the shinui on Shabbos. The reality is that very, very often for the baby, it's very important for his health. And that's why whenever this question comes up, you have to ask. Don't assume, I'm not allowed to do this. We definitely do milk. We milk cows on Shabbat, because otherwise they'd suffer. There are situations where the cow has to be to let go of its milk, but we won't milk it into a container. We'll let it go. We'll say it's nolad. I don't need it. I'm not collecting it. Meaning, there are different ways to do this, which we're not going into now. It's not so relevant for us. But we'll just mention the idea that when it comes up, ask a question. Don't just assume, you're not allowed to milk on Shabbos. And as I mentioned, a baby for sure is supposed to nurse on Shabbos. No one's saying babies shouldn't nurse on Shabbos. Our question is, when a person is extracting, into the baby's mouth, where you're collecting baby bottles, which later on you'll feed the baby. Yes?
How can something that's intrinsically not muksa be made muksa via mola? It's a dravana.
Okay.
I'm saying, so how can a sidur become muksa? How can something, milk is would intrinsically not, it's food. Food isn't...
We said an egg. An egg, about an egg, there's a machloket, because the Gemara says that any egg that's laid today was fully formed yesterday already, inside the chicken. The Gemara says if the chicken laid an egg today, so then it's that tells you that the egg was already ready yesterday. But definitely that can happen.
It's just plucking something from a tree, then it's like a product of something like a sword. It's like a fruit didn't exist for me earlier because it was on the tree.
That's not mitzad nolad. It's not nolad. I'm saying, but here you have something which was not in this form earlier. It was just created now. I have to think of a good example. Give me 1 second. Okay, right now I'm not thinking of a good example, but...
what's the difference between that and cholent, wasn't edible, for part of the Shabbat? In the morning, it's completely covered.
I think the difference is that it's not predictable. But it's not, when you set up a chulin to cook, so then you've put raw beans. We're going to go with the opinion that you're allowed to do this on Friday afternoon. 5 minutes before you accept Shabbos, you're allowed to put up a raw chulin. We're not knowing like that. The Be'er Halacha says, we don't go with that leniency. But in the Gemara, it says it's mutter. The Gemara says, kidra chayta shari. It's permissible to put up a raw chulin the minute before you accept Shabbos. And then it'll be ready tomorrow morning. That's permissible. And we also hold it's permissible. We've just adopted the custom not to work with that leniency. We prefer to have the things cooked. I'm saying it's mutar. So I'm saying, in your example.
Just in case that, you know, it should be fully cooked and we're careful about it.
But say there.
Right.
So I'm saying. So that's why I just don't want people to misunderstand what I'm saying. So that's why I'm explaining the background to the question. But I think that over there, when you set up your chulent before Shabbat, so you know it's going to be ready tomorrow morning. And that's why you've set it in a state so that when you accept Shabbat, your focus is, I'm going to eat that tomorrow. It's going to be edible. It's going to be ready. I'm going to eat it. It's in a state. It's in a state of cooking, but it's in a state which will be edible, and that's your intention. You're going to eat it. If we're going to go with the idea of an egg, the egg wasn't accessible. When Shabbat entered, you'd have to slaughter that chicken to get the egg. There was no permissible way to access it. When the egg is laid, then you could say, okay, now I have access to it. But how could you have intention you're going to eat that egg yesterday as Shabbat settled? I think that's, if we're going to analyze the difference between those two examples, I think so. Again, with regards to an egg, it's a machloket also. But yeah, but let's take the ashes. The ashes is a more difficult example, because you're saying, I already have the fire burning, but it's not in the world. It's not here. The essence of nolad is that's not here. I have wood here. You're saying we have to define a little bit better why wood that becomes ashes is considered a new creation, and beans that become cooked is not considered a new creation. Right? That's really, if I'm going to define your question, you're saying the ash is new, and the cooked chulin bean is not new. It's a new status. I think we can see the difference, even though I'm not saying it clearly enough. I agree.
I guess it was also sort of hard. I'd always thought that, or conceived that moksha is not ever being applicable to, I guess, with these exceptions, but like that it can't apply to something that's intrinsically not.
You're right. I'm saying we generally, you're right.
That is edible. Like, how can the rabbi, you know, how can they prohibit something that's just normatively fine?
Okay.
Years of it didn't exist before. Like, if you conjure a siddur, you can't use it for like.
No. That's true. If you create certain things, if you would, yeah, if you would create a siddur on Shabbat. What?
If someone conjures a siddur with the magic or something, maybe actually couldn't use it because it's malad.
Right. So,